Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, we look at the Eagles, their four flags. Which was the best team? Mick Mouldhouse, where does he sit in WA footy? The rules, JLT games, and more.
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. Thursday, that means it's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Glenn Quartermain with me. Quarters, this is the podcast where...
Oh, the ox is slow, Duff, but the earth is...
Patient.
Exactly.
Michael Mouldhouse.
Yes, and we will...
At some point in the 1990s.
Yes, at some point in the 1990s, one of his many, many, many quotes, and we all have our mixed stories. Arguably, certainly in modern times, Duff, the most influential person in football in this state. Where do you have him?
Yeah, probably he's up there. I think John Worsfold is up there. I think... Two administrators, I think Trevor Nisbet and Brian Cook are both up there as well.
And Brian Cook, when you look at him and what he's done after moving on from WA over to Geelong, really, really was one of the key architects here in Frank Costa in saving that club.
Absolutely. I think Brian Cook's record as a CEO is quite incredible. You know, the Eagles were a basket case when he went there in ahead of the 1990 season, and they were a powerhouse when he left. And he went and joined Geelong, who faced significant difficulties when he went there, and he's rebuilt two stadiums, Brian Cook, and won five premierships.
And in between, pulling off Rottnest swims every year too. And
yeah, he loves
in pretty
swim.
Good nick, Cookie. Great man.
He was pretty good on the Fistic Fury too, Cookie. He was a champion schoolboy boxer.
Okay.
Yeah, so he wasn't a person to be
so I reckon he played,
tampered with.
Did he play reserves for Hawthorn?
He did. Played a bit for Subiaco.
And then he was on Melbourne's list for a little while, perhaps?
I think he may have been, yes. He was obviously at the, I think he was in Canberra at the Institute of Sport for a while, and then came here. And he was, I think he, Trevor Nisbet and Mick Mouldhouse were the triumvirate that turned West Coast around and turned them into the powerhouse.
Now, the reason we're bringing this up, and I will mention a couple of other Mick quotes because we love them, Duff, is that over the next 2 weeks, the Weekend West and the Sunday Times, we're looking at the four Eagles premierships, 92, 94, 2006, 2018. We're using today's champion data statistics, and we're pouring through them, and we're comparing the four teams. And on the final Sunday, Duff, you'll be coming up with your verdict on who's the best of those four teams using this data. Really hard to do, but we're going to do our best.
And luckily, listeners, I am old enough to do it. I was around in 1992 and 1994, so many people are probably too young to have a great memory of those days. But certainly they were history-making days for the Eagles, becoming the first club to take the flag out of Victoria. All great teams, Quarters. All teams with... their different strengths, I think. You know, we remember the all-round strength, I think, of the 92 and 94 teams. We remember the midfield of the 2006 team, and obviously the goal-to-goal structure of the 2018 team with Kennedy and Darling up front. And
I'll give you my very quick précis of my four memories from those four grand finals. The first 92 was Matera and his calf muscles. I remember watching him kick that fifth goal on the run, and then they were going around the boundary line with the cup. And I remember the lead up to that game was, if an interstate club wins for the first time, what's the atmosphere going to be like? The atmosphere was unbelievable. It was fantastic. And I was on the ground.
We used to get to walk around the ground to go
and
to the rooms?
And Matera ran past me with a cup, and I remember thinking, jeez, look at the size of those calf muscles. Yeah, he's just an athlete. Tony Evans, too, his performance in that game stands out. 94, first 10 minutes, I'm not sure what minute mark it was, but outer wing, Worsfold and a Geelong player game for the footy from opposite angles, and let's just say Woosher came away with a footy, and I turned to the guy next to me and said, this is all over, Eagles won't, we're going to win this. 2006, attrition, just attrition. And last year, for me, it's one of the great grand final victories. You talk about Essendon in 84. You talk about some of those great grand finals, what West Coast had to come back from. Let's just forget about how hard it is to win as an interstate team. What West Coast had to come back from on the day, to me, puts it in that top ilk of great grand final victories of all time.
Yeah, I remember all of Matera's goals in 92, and really, it wasn't just the fact he kicked five goals, the nature of the goals, three of them from out on the 50. One of them was close to 60 metres on the dead run.
Yep.
I remember that very clearly. 2006, Daniel Chick's chase down tackle on the outer wing of Ted Richards was a clear memory for me. 2018, well, I guess the Sheed goal is the one that sticks out in the memory.
So with Mick, you know, Duffin, I'm tipping. Well, I'm not tipping. I know you and I have both been on the end of some great sprays on match day. Some of them have been quite interesting. But I will say one thing about Mick. Away from the field, he was always good company and good to talk to footy about. But some of his great quotes over the years, we can't let a conversation about Mick go without mentioning them. We mentioned before, the ox is slow, but the earth is patient. And, you know, he used to rip these quotes out every now and then, and we just look at each other and laugh. It was gold for our copy, but it was just, where'd that come from? At the end of the day, you're a windshield or a bug.
Yes, I've used that one in my copy a few times.
Mick was offering a blunt assessment of things after a West Coast win over Fremantle in 1998. That was when that one came out. The next one. The meek may inherit the earth, but they will never win games of football.
I remember that one too.
And maybe my favourite. Oh, the ox is hard to beat, but my favourite. Praising Glenn Jakovich in his own unique way after an excellent performance on Wayne Carey. Only he who does not fear death by a thousand cuts dares to unseat the emperor.
Oh, very good. He also pulled out the one from L. Alamein, the Churchill quote from L. Alamein. This is not the end. It may not even be the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning. I remember that one.
And he liked his war references, Mick, and used to reference them with the players and often used it in a build-up to a game. Just certain battles and strategies, really interesting stuff.
Yes, he was a great coach, one of the great, the first probably of the really great defensive coaches, I think, that probably dominated football for 10 years or so, I think, through the 1990s and into the noughties.
With Bluey McKenna, that linchpin from halfback.
Yeah, well, he had one of the great halfback lines, didn't he?
Yeah, McKenna, great midfield.
Jakovich and Worsfold. He had Ashley McIntosh and Michael Brennan, you know, behind them. I remember the players on the bench in the 1992 Grand Final at the start of the game were Craig Turley and Chris Lewis.
Yeah.
One was an All-Australian best and fairest winner. The other one was a runner-up in the 1991 Brownlow Medal.
And I still go back, I often mention this, but I still go back to the 1990 Final Series. Chris Lewis's performance is one of the great individual performances I've ever seen. His performance across that final series.
Yeah, he was in absolute red-hot form.
So get your weekend West, get your Sunday Times. Get them all the time, of course, but over the next couple of weekends, it's going to be really interesting reading.
Okay, Quarters, well, what's the wash-up from JLT week one, and looking forward to JLT week two?
I think we're happy with the way the new rules look. I think there are still teething problems, as we expected.
What about Steve Hocking making some noises about what feedback he'd like from the clubs on maybe changes to the lead up to round one, given the number of injuries we get?
Well, I think it's a good move by Steve Hocking, is that he wants information from the clubs, each of the 18 clubs on the entire preseason. Now they get their 3-week break over Christmas. He's saying there's a lot of injuries happening in preseason. For me, there's always a lot of injuries happening in pre-season, and I'm not sure what you can do to tweak it. Of course, it's all about the AFLPA. Players need their breaks. But he's going to get all that information at the end of this season, compile it, and just see if there's a better way to go about it. I'm really not sure if there is, to be quite honest. But it doesn't hurt to look at it. Look at the data. There might be some left field ideas from clubs that may really improve their pre-season. One thing is, Duff, you just need the loading, don't you? You can't go into a round one half-cooked.
No, and I think, you know, people talk about injuries in the JLT Community Series, but if they shortened the JLT Community Series to try and avoid injuries in that, or they lightened off the intensity of it somehow, then all you would be doing is shifting the injuries to round one. At some point, when the intensity of the games and the activity increases, at some point players are going to fall victim to that, and they fall victim throughout the season anyway. So I'm not sure there's much you can do. I actually like the only two-game build-up because I think clubs are under pressure to pick close to their best team, although your boys took their thirds to Queensland last week. But
I don't mind that either. I mean, depending where you are in your development, if you want to take a thirds team to see what you can, you know, shake the bottle and see what falls out sometimes, I don't mind that.
Nathan Fyfe was in this building about a week ago and we were asking him, okay, well, what's your leading going to be? Because obviously he's had the elbow surgery. And he said, well, you know, I expect to play JLT too. But he said, if I don't, he said, we do so much match simulation at training now. He said, I expect to be, you know, absolutely ready to play round one.
Do you expect him to play on Sunday?
At that point, he was expecting to play against West Coast on Sunday.
I'm not sure if he's playing on Sunday, though. I'm not sure. I think there is some question mark there now. Well, I don't think it matters, by the way. I just think, of all people, I think Fyfe just hits the ground running for round one. I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, and he's had the, even though it's, I don't think it's much chop, he's had the AFLX, you know, he's run around in that. So he certainly had a full pre-season. I would imagine he would prefer to play. I would imagine Fremantle would prefer him to have played just because with the new rules, with the centre square setups, with their patterns of play, with two new tall forwards and a couple of new guys in Conker and Collier running through the midfield, not to mention some young players like Chera and Brayshaw and Tucker running through the midfield, I reckon they'd like to have some time with Fyfe running around with them.
See how the chemistry is going to work. See how the rotation through half forward is going to work as well with Michael Walters and David Mundy. I agree, But again, you know, it's a long season and he knows his body better than anyone. He's a pro. He's in pretty good nick. I think the elbow is nothing to be too concerned about. It's a bursa. He's drained.
Well, he was certainly running strongly down at Coburn yesterday when I was down there.
The only thing is these things can be, they can linger, those sorts of injury, those minor surgery, it's not going to have any long-term effect, but they can linger. That's also probably best to get him right.
He had some staples put in it, so I'd imagine they're waiting for that to heal and making sure that doesn't get infected. Of course, Reece Conker developed a knee infection and that cost him a game in JLT1. He was out there running very strongly yesterday down at Coburn, so you'd expect him to be around the mark.
There's another couple of players going to play on Sunday. Their names just escape me at the moment, Duff. There's been no publicity around them. Is it Gaff?
Apparently there's a handshake agreement that they're going to play.
Gaff and Brayshaw.
Gaff and Brayshaw, yes.
Brayshaw. So does Gaff, by the way, but gee speaks well, Brayshaw. I loved what he had to say yesterday.
He screams future AFL club captain, doesn't he, Andrew Brayshaw?
Well, I just thought it was, you know, there is an argument whether he should have been rolled out yesterday, whether it should have been someone else. I totally agree that he should have been rolled out yesterday. I liked it, and I liked what he said. I think it was very mature.
Who reckons someone else should be rolled out?
Oh, well, there's just comments out there about maybe the captain should have come out. You know, maybe there's too much pressure. You're bringing the incident up again.
It's a pre-season game.
It's going to get bigger in round four, don't worry.
Because I don't know about that. I think they can go a fair way to putting it to bed.
Yeah.
Like, if I was, and I think that's part of the strategy here. I thought Ross Lyon was spot on the money after the game on Monday, where he said, we're going to get Andrew Brayshaw to talk. We know everyone's going to be talking about it, so let's get him to talk. Brayshaw said, I want to, you know, if I get the chance, I'll go out of my way. I'll go over and shake his hand, wish him luck, and then when we go for the ball, it'll be on. And that's, you would expect no less from him. You'd expect no less from Andrew Gaff. And I think, you know, shake each other's hand, sort of like, you know, warmly acknowledge each other. And then there are AFL footballers.
I guess the interesting thing, round four is an Eagles game. Later in the year, it'll be a Fremantle home game. We'll see what happens then. But, it'd be good for them to move on, I think.
But that'll be the crowd reaction.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Andrew Gaff will be strongly supported in round four, and he'll be booed in the Fremantle home game. And he'll probably be booed for the rest of his career every time he plays in front of a Fremantle crowd. And that's just...
Yeah, he's not the Lone Ranger. Plenty of players have gone before him with that.
That's going to, and I don't think West Coast can claim
No.
Immunity from booing. I think if booing was an Olympic sport, they're on the dais.
Oh, they're on the podium. Maybe a little bit of goal around the neck.
Yes. Yes, they're very good at it. Okay, so let's talk about some games this weekend, Quarters.
Geelong v Essendon. So week two of the JLT, and then we have a break, and then we're into the real stuff. So week two of the JLT. Again, it's tinkering. It's getting some Ks into the legs of players. It's trying setups forward, back, midfield. All of these clubs will do that. It's running young kids through, seeing where they're at, whether they're capable of maybe getting a spot on the bench round one. It's all these things and more. Maybe it's coaches looking at the new setups. They're probably not going to give too much away at this point, but seeing how things work.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because it is a fair bit different to what we've known. Coaches like to keep stuff up their sleeve and spring it on an opponent in round one. But you've also got to know some effects of all this. So it's a difficult one for coaches to balance out this
really one. Really much so, yeah.
Because you don't want to go in totally blind in round one. You want to try a few things against an AFL quality opponent.
So maybe we see a bit more of it this week than we did in week one. Maybe week one was let's have a look at it. Yeah. And week two is let's try something. And I don't think we'll really see coaches show their hand for a while yet either. I don't think you're going to see all the answers in round one. I think it'll take them a while to adjust.
Well, maybe, yeah, exactly. Maybe they don't have a hand to show. Like maybe coaches are still looking at, well, what's this going to mean? And how are clubs going to try and exploit this offensively? And therefore, how do we try and defend that?
Yeah.
Because often offense is about the instincts of players and what they can do in the space created. And then defense is about what coaches can do and what mechanisms they can put in place.
I'm really interested to see ultimately what they do in terms of your setups at centre bounces and how they work it, how quickly they can get players behind the ball. For me, that's going to be interesting.
And also, you know, the other thing that's going to be critical is how coaches try and spread their players around the 50-metre arcs.
Exactly.
Because if you're worried about the other team getting possession of the ball, you're trying to close down the leading space. And if you think that you're getting possession of the ball, you're trying to open that up or get one player on a mismatch deep that you can go to, like West Coast.
Well, you're going to have two in the goal square, aren't you?
Yeah, so there's a one-on-one in the goal square. So that is probably where you're looking for the mismatch. But it might be, you know, 30 metres out on a 45-degree angle. If Jack Darling gets caught on Paul Callery
Callery?
He was the smallest man in footy.
Little St Kilda Rover, who was, nearly expired on the footy field one day, but fortunately lived and played on. But anyway, for another day.
If a tall gets caught on a small in that position, then you're probably going
there. Was he 4 foot eight? What was Paul Callery?
He was tiny.
Tiny little fella, yeah.
He was tiny, yes.
So Geelong Essendon this evening. 4:10 p.m. our time. Gary Ablett returns for the Cats, and he's already flagged his role this year will be primarily as a forward with minimal time in the midfield.
Should have been last year.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, he said, I'm not sure, probably my last year, but I'm still not sure. Let's just call it his last year.
So Geelong are flagging a change of style to a more, deep forward pressure style of game, which they feel they haven't been that good at in the past. I'm not sure that their manpower suits that style of game, Quarters. They're quite bullish about it. They think it will take them forward. They think it's an area of their game that they've lacked. But I don't know. I don't see Gary Ablett as a high-pressure forward. I mean, no. Dangerfield's a great competitive beast. But is he a sort of a tackle-pressure type forward when he goes down there? I don't know. Sometimes you've got to play to your strengths. I don't know whether this is going to be one of Geelong's strengths.
Maybe Abbott plays as a high forward and gets the hell out of there if you're talking about pressure. He's your exit point, perhaps.
Obviously, Essendon, we expect Joe Danaher to play.
He's playing. Myers is back. Bill Chambers is back. And Brian Taylor's favourite anyway. Orazio? Fantasia. Apparently. Not Fantasia. Fantasia. Is the correct pronunciation.
I have to say I prefer Fantasia.
So do I.
And I love the way Brian says
Hollywood. It's Hollywood Fantasia.
Orazio.
Orazio will do. We know who he's talking about.
Yeah, he's one of those guys. He's the little O.
And so Joe Danaher hopefully gets some more time in those legs. And yes. He's very, very important to them. I've flagged them as a really big improver this year. I think they'll play off in the GF. That's just my early call. It's a very early call. But he's key to that.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's the one that takes their forward line to a new level. We didn't see that much of him last week against Carlton, so yeah. Hopefully more game time for him. Hopefully he catches a couple, kicks
and
a couple.
Dylan Shield got a bit of a nasty corky last week, so we may not see anything. We know what he can do. So he's again, gives that midfield, which has already had a fair bit of depth, gives it a little bit more class.
Who else have we got there?
Giants v Adelaide Crows on Friday. I think the significant one there for Adelaide, and I think what we saw from the Giants last week, I know you're very bullish on them still. I'm a little bit more reluctant on the Giants this year, but certainly what we saw last week was what we've seen in the past. They're going to be pretty hard to beat. Adelaide Tarley returns from them after a long-term knee injury. Very obviously very important defender for them.
So the interesting thing about Adelaide last week was their ball movement from 2017 looked to be back. They were scoring off ball movement. They were very bold, very precise. They were getting the ball in quickly to their forwards. So that's significant for them. Well, hopefully that translates into the season proper. The thing about GWS quarters, and John Worsfold actually pointed this out at an address that he gave over in Melbourne in the pre-season. He said, people look at what's left, what has left at the club, but look at what is left, and a lot of those players, their top players, are coming into their prime.
Yes.
So he thinks that they will still be very much a force, and he certainly doesn't rule them out of premiership contention.
Fully fit, absolutely. And if you look at the steps they've taken, second last week of the finals. So it's there. The progression is there. The pathway is there. My question mark is, I do think that midfield has been diluted. And if they do cop some injuries, then they're going to be back to the back among the big group of clubs.
They surely can't have more injuries than they've had in the last two or three seasons.
I'm not wishing that on them. I'm just saying that it worries me there has been a dilution of talent. So if that happens, that they may come back to the pack a little bit. Yeah. But certainly fully fit, there's a lot to love about them. There's class on every line. So, and Adelaide, let's not forget they were in a grand final 2 years ago. Had a horrible year last year for many, many, many reasons, notwithstanding the pre-season debacle, but the infamous camp. But, they were beaten by a side that was irresistible on grand final day, Richmond. I don't know why they tinkered with anything, really, because they almost made it.
Sometimes a bad day on grand final day is just a bad day on grand final day.
And that's what they had.
Let's not forget they lost Brody Smith in that final series. He's very important to them and a real key to their ball movement. And they had to play a team that was playing on its home ground. And this is a factor that all interstate clubs have got to think about before they overreact on one of these occasions. Sometimes winning a flag for a non-Victorian club is about being lucky enough to play a team that's not as familiar with the MCG as Richmond were. Adam Simpson made this point last year when they beat Collingwood. He said it's a big thing to go to the MCG on grand final day and beat an MCG tenant. He said it's a big thing. And that was probably just made the West Coast victory just that little bit sweeter, and it made Adelaide's job against Richmond that little bit tougher.
Port Adelaide v North Melbourne, Saturday at good old Albert and Oval. So North will enjoy that. Be some characters on the boundary line, no doubt.
And will they call them bays or will they call them cell blocks?
A bit of both, I think. I think they're cell blocks and they'll be baying.
I'm being facetious there. I know quite a few Port Adelaide people. My sports editor is a Port Adelaide person.
Craig Nitschke, yes.
And for the most part, Port Adelaide people are real salt of the earth football supporters. They're good people.
So Polek will be playing against his Polek's return, I guess, would be.
Will Polek be Polaxed?
Yeah, well, I guess that's, you look at these things, don't you? When you look at games, you draw a line under them. For me, him, Polek returning.
Yeah. He'll probably be happy to get this one out of the way in the pre-season rather than the season proper, I reckon, Jared Polek.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I have no doubt players who move clubs They would look at the fixture and that would be the first thing they would underline.
Yeah, when they first run into their old teammates and their old supporter bases.
Melbourne v Brisbane Lions, Saturday, Casey Fields. Both teams look pretty impressive at the weekend. Melbourne, we expect to be top four. Brisbane, we expect to be knocking on the door. I would not be surprised if they make the eight. You know, lots to like about both teams.
Yeah, I haven't quite got Brisbane in my eight, but I think they will improve further. And given that they lost so many games so closely last year, I expect them to maybe double their win tally. They won five last year. I'd expect them to win, you know, 9, 10 or 11 this year. Melbourne, you're right. I think we all think Melbourne's going to come out of the ground this year. They've a problem for them when they got monstered in the preliminary final against West Coast was their backline structure. Obviously, they've added Stephen May. They get Jake Lever back from a serious knee injury.
When is Lever back?
Well, he was early in the season when he did the knee.
So you'd say sort of getting towards mid-year he should return?
No, earlier? I would think he'd be earlier than that. Unless there's been some setback we're not aware of, I would think Jake Lever will be around, maybe not round one or two, but you know, probably by about round five or six.
And even though he hasn't been playing football, you would think that Lever has had a bit of a time to analyse and fit in. It looked a bit at sea early last year in that Melbourne defence. We know the terrific football he played at Adelaide and was one of the key players in the competition in that role. And if he can return to that form and that role for Melbourne, then that just takes them another step towards where they want to be.
I think May's a big in.
Massive in.
You know, he's a great power defender, Stephen May. He's not always the most disciplined player going around. I don't think he was a good choice as a co-captain at Gold Coast. It was probably a matter of trying to take some pressure off Tom Lynch and also have their two best players as the two best captains. But I think he's better just being a player at your club. I think he'll be a very good power defender and he'll shore up their defensive stocks.
Never looked settled on the Gold Coast.
Yeah, I don't know whether Stephen May's going to look settled anywhere.
He might at a club like Melbourne. He may just feel settled there. Hawthorn v Richmond in Tasmania.
This would be the Hawthorn A graders as opposed to the C graders, would it?
B plus.
B plus this week?
I would say, yeah. You'll see more of James Cousins and Warple through the middle, players that they rate very highly. You'll probably see more. You obviously won't see Tom Mitchell. You won't see Grant Birchall yet, who's still very important to that Hawthorn back line. A player you just to keep an eye on if you're watching is Scrimshaw, who's come from the Gold Coast, was a very early pick. Left footer, half back, plays very much that Grant Birchall type of play.
So Ian Scrimshaw's son, I believe.
Yes. I remember Ian Scrimshaw, yeah.
Former Carlton.
Richmond.
Richmond's East Perth player. Actually played a bit in the South West Football League when I was down there and played a bit in the Upper Great Southern.
Did you play against him?
I did. It was one memorable brawl, actually, at the Darkin Football Oval when Railways were playing West Arthur. And Ian was on the other team. We didn't exchange blows or anything, but we did stand near one another in the puncher.
And was he big?
I don't remember him being overly bigger than me. He was probably a bit more strongly built than me, I think. But he was certainly, we were more watching what was going on around us. There was a fair few punches being thrown all around us that
now,
day.
Now, without saying like you're sounding like you rate yourself, give me out of 10, how were you in the, let's call it the Biffo Steaks.
I was trying to pull players apart mainly. Okay,
you were a lover, not a fighter.
I was a lover, not a fighter. But there were some very strong punches being thrown. Mark Riley, Bomber Riley.
Oh yeah.
Of course, Claremont, Melbourne, Gold Coast. He was coaching Railways that day. He remembered that fight years later because he talked about. He said generally in a football brawl, there's a lot of pushing, shoving and jumper tugging. He said you could hear the crack of fists on heads that day. He said he was on the boundary. He said it was an ugly sound.
And you know, sometimes when you're out in the ground and that happens, it's okay. But when you're on the interchange and you're looking out in towards it and you know you're coming on soon, that's the worst place to be sometimes. You don't want to be amongst it. Richmond, obviously, I rate them very highly. I think we both do. We won't see Tom Lynch. We're not really going to get a good look at Richmond and what they're going to become until around rounds two or three, maybe probably round three when Lynch plays for them. That's the estimation. Sydney Swans v Gold Coast Sunday at Lismore. Sydney, really interesting team this year.
Where have you got them?
I've got them in the eight. I rate their kids. I'm a big Heaney and Mills fan, and the other players coming up. Really interesting stage. They do have a few veterans on their list, but they do have that. They've got, you know, right at the pointy end of the youth, I reckon, Sydney.
So I hear you. Heaney's clearly a super player already,
yep.
And Mills not far away from being a super player. Obviously had the big
Florent,
injury.
Florent, those types of players too.
Florent's okay. Yeah. I want to see more of Florent. I think Hewitt is a good player.
He's a great player, Hewitt, yeah.
I'm just not sure that the Heaney Mills just in themselves, is that's enough. I'm strongly considering leaving Sydney out of my own.
Yeah, that's why I say they're a really interesting point, really interesting juncture. They're 9 years in a row, I think they played finals.
Yeah.
Last two or three have been at the bottom end, but still a great effort by that club to just appear year after year in the finals and very well coached by John Longmire.
So follow-up question, how many goals does Lance Franklin kick in 2009?
I'm going close to a triple ton if he's fully fit. I just think it'll be the return of, I'm hoping it's the return of the Centurion this year, and if anyone's going to do it, he is.
Okay.
We'll say
I'm going to write that down.
Yeah.
Glenn Quartermain.
Yeah, please do.
March.
I'm a big fan of Buddy, by the way. You do. And Richmond to play Essendon in the GF. Get that one down. Gold Coast, I expect them to finish bottom three.
Yep.
There was a bit to like about them at the weekend. We've already spoken about Will Powell on a few occasions. He's bulked up a bit and looks like he'll be a more regular player this year.
So what did you make of Lukosius and Rankine?
Lukosius was sort of there wasn't enough of it. Didn't have enough of it to really form an opinion. He's going to be a very good player. Didn't look out of place. Rankine, for me, I got a bit more of a look at him, and he looked like he's got the touch, he's got the feel, he knows the space. You know when players look like they've got the time and space? He's one of those players. Mm. He looks ready-made. He looks like I saw him handball through a pack at one point and just hit the target, and I thought, yeah, you know what's going on here, you know. Mm. And it was a decent pack too, you know. I just think he's going to be some player. They've obviously got them early. They're highly rated through the South Australian system. Like the look of Peter Wright too, 2 metre Peter at the weekend. He'll obviously have a bit more of a role to play down forward now that Lynch is gone.
So people forget Peter Wright for 2 years in 2016, 2017, kicked 58 goals in two seasons.
Yeah.
He played only 7 games last year and kicked 5 goals.
He looks really fit to me. Yeah. Looks really fit, and I really hope he can stand it. I'm a Gold Coast fan in terms of
want them to do well.
Well, they've been raided. Let's be honest, they haven't been treated well at all by the AFL. So I want them to do well, and let's hope he's a key part of it. Western Bulldogs v St Kilda Sunday at Mars Stadium.
So that's,
remind me,
Bendigo.
Yes, it is. Good call. Yes. So I won't be driving down. If I put it this way, if I was living in Melbourne,
better to be playing at Mars Stadium in March than in July.
Oh,
Glenn.
Yeah. Yes, and I
a little bit chilly in July, I think.
This is Bendigo or Ballarat?
Well, both.
Oh, okay, is that Mars Stadium, Ballarat.
It's one of them. It's either Ballarat or Bendigo.
Yeah, I think. Okay. Well, if it's Ballarat.
There was a very chilly
Ballarat's
game.
Colder than Bendigo, I can tell you, because it's actually in a hole. It's actually in a hole.
Yes, a hole.
And that's why when you drive.
Is that what it means, Ballarat?
Ballarat is an indigenous word. It means hole in the ground. Ballarat. It does. It's true. I remember that from my year 12 history teacher. Hello, Mick Wilson. But yes, it was. It's a hole in the ground. And when you drive into Ballarat, you just see TV aerials everywhere, these massive TV aerials.
Many people shorten that and they say it's a hole.
Yeah, it is a hole. Actually, it's not. It's all right. Ballarat's all right.
No, I'm a country boy. I love big country towns. Ballarat, I've only been through it a couple of times. And I went through it in summer, so I saw the best of Ballarat.
The point I'm making is, if I'm living in
not
Melbourne,
that hospitable.
I'm living in Melbourne still. I'm probably not driving down there to watch the Dogs and the Saints, unless I'm a Dogs and a Saints follower.
Did you like about the Saints? They beat North Melbourne last week. What did you like about them?
They're really iffy, mate. I mean, I mean, when you say, what did you? I don't really pay much credence to results in the JLT. I'm sounding like a coach now, aren't I? I really don't. I just think you can just almost put an X through the coach, through the yes, you pay attention to the goal kickers and the best players, but I think the final score really doesn't mean a lot. Although I'd be shocked if they had a great improvement this year. I just don't think they've got enough A-graders.
Bottom three?
Yeah, bottom five.
Bottom five, okay.
Yeah. Just not enough A-graders for mine. And, of course, Sunday, certainly what we're all salivating over locally, if you can. What did you call it before? JLT?
Derby Light.
Derby Light, exactly. Here's a question. Do you think, so you play your two pre-season JLT fixtures every year.
Yep.
Should one fixture in every state, so for here, let's use Fremantle and West Coast as an example, should you make sure you do have a big local fixture in the JLT, but you move it to a country area every year, like I'm saying, move it right out to a country area? Go to.
Well, what have they done? West Coast and Fremantle have played in Geraldton.
Yeah.
Which was good. I think there was about 10,000 people watched up there.
So it's in Mandurah this week. What I'm saying is,
yeah,
mate, should we go further out? Should we really develop this as some so a community out there that's struggling, perhaps? Pick a struggling community and get the game out there and really...
Well, when Nathan Fyfe was in here last week, he was all for a fixture in Lake Grace.
Well, why wouldn't you? Well, that's a great idea. I know he's from there.
The Oval would want to be a lot softer than it was when I played.
That's true. Well, you've obviously got it. You can't be playing on a paddock.
I agree with what you're saying in principle, but I think you probably need to keep it to places like a Geraldton, a Bunbury, an Albany, maybe an Esperance.
Marble Bar, no?
No, I don't think Marble Bar, no.
Well, we need a bit of grass on the Oval. Let's.
And you also, yeah, you
that
don't,
is a prerequisite.
You don't want a player rolling an ankle and doing ligaments because there's a pothole somewhere out on the
understand that,
ground,
yeah. So. But I guess it's not beyond. My point is, it's do we pick a venue early in the year, knowing that in 12 months that's going to be a venue, and you actually develop the ground and you pump some money into it.
I like that idea.
Yeah, so yeah. You can actually go out there and it's AFL standard, yeah. At least for that year.
Yeah.
It's not going to remain that way, but, you know, it's just a thought.
No, I like that idea. And I think maybe have it as the first JLT game so that it becomes the first match practice that everybody sees.
Yeah.
And
the build-up would be huge for that. Imagine what that town could gain out of that and the businesses.
Well, they did it in South Australia, didn't they? Port Adelaide and Adelaide played in Port Pirie.
Yep.
Last week, which is good. I think because you get the feeling that the pre-season games are losing their appeal a bit with the public. If you look at the attendances of the two West Australian clubs last week, they would regularly play in front of 8,000 to 10,000 in the pre-season. West Coast played in front of 6,000 when they played last Friday night against Geelong at Leederville, and Fremantle played in front of 5,500 when they played Collingwood at Joondalup, and of course Collingwood has a big following, so that probably a few of them were Collingwood fans as well. So I think it's dropped off a little bit. Yeah, I think to take it somewhere like a Geraldton or an Albany or a Bunbury or an Esperance, one of those places, and you're right, 12 months out, say this is where we're going to go. They put a lot of time into the Oval, make sure that's AFL standard, put a lot of time, maybe use it as a spur to get community facilities.
Absolutely.
So maybe, you know, spend a couple of million dollars making sure the change rooms were up to scratch, and then the local league gets those facilities as a legacy of having that game there. Use the game to generate funds for that area, give footy a big boost in that area. I think that has a lot of appeal and a lot of
And you
merit.
Do it all around Australia, so it almost becomes like your derby round light.
Yes.
You know, they like to have that round, don't they? The rivalry round.
Yes.
So you can do it all throughout Victoria, country Victoria, all throughout country. Certainly you could do it in South Australia. You could do it in New South Wales, Queensland. I think it's a good idea. There you go, Duff. There's our idea for the
week. And I think the other thing, Quarters, like while Hawthorn is going to Tasmania, there's a strong case to argue that Hawthorn should play both of its JLT matches in Tasmania.
I'd agree with that.
Against a Melbourne club.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think that, or against Melbourne clubs, because I think that you want to maximise the use of those stadiums. You want to maximise that club's exposure to that market. So I think there's a strong case to argue that if Hawthorn chooses to play games in Tasmania, they should play both.
Yeah, I think they would embrace. I think Hawthorn would embrace that, and it would be. They've already made a small, if not step, at least it's a step towards addressing the situation in Tasmania, which has become dire, and that would be another great step along that pathway, I think.
And maybe North Melbourne, you know, goes to Hobart and plays Melbourne-based clubs as well there.
Yeah, great idea.
All right, now...
We should also mention, we're still alive, aren't we, with the game? Yes.
Yes, we are.
So March 12th, thegame.com.au, get in, register. If you get in before March 12th, you can win a double pass to every Optus home game this year, including hospitality.
Which you and I think would love. Be a bloody good thing.
Yeah, that's right.
So thegame.com.au before March 12 is for our tipping and Pick 7 competitions. Get involved. And Pick 7, great competition to be involved in.
It is.
It's pretty straightforward.
Very different. And it's very straightforward.
You've got to pick guns and you've got to have them have big games on that particular weekend. Yeah. So a good one to be involved in. Quarters, Steve Hocking, before we go. When he was in Perth last week, we discussed briefly the prospect of an AFL reserves competition.
Yep.
Now, Hocking basically said it's not on their agenda. Now, the key there is not on their agenda. He didn't say it's not on our immediate agenda. He said it's not on our agenda.
And it's really interesting, the language there, because it was only 2 weeks earlier that he did say it's not on our immediate agenda. And then all of a sudden it's not on our agenda. Now, we've discussed this. I'm more bullish towards the reserves competition, and you made a very strong argument as to why you're not so bullish on it. And I think your arguments are pretty sound. And it looks as though, at least for the foreseeable future, there won't be a reserves comp.
So what Hocking said was that he doesn't like the idea of homogenised football development, where states like South Australia and Western Australia try to replicate what they have with the TAC Cup and what they have in the Victorian development season. He said the great thing about West Australian players in the past is they were a certain type of player. They were highly skilled. They were great running players. And you got them to your club to lift the skill level at the club and give you some silk and those sorts of things. And he said we should be encouraging different styles of player in the AFL, and we should be encouraging different development systems to get into the AFL. So that was a really encouraging thing, I think, for the local football administrators.
If you're a Waffle fan and you're a Sandful fan, that's music to your ears.
Absolutely. The other thing he said was that possibility that they may look at shortening AFL lists. Now, as far as the Waffle and Sandful competitions go, that is a significant thing too, I think, because what that means is that clubs won't be able to afford to have as many young players on their list, so they will go for more mature talent, and it might be that the Waffle and the Sandful will get a look at players for a couple of years before they graduate into the AFL system. So you may see more Tim Kellys running around at South Fremantle for a couple of years. You might see Bailey Banfield running around at Claremont for two or three years. You might see more Zach Langdons running around.
I guess if you look at the opposite end of it, though, it's also depriving those players opportunities to be on AFL lists if the lists are shorter.
Well, deprive. It's probably waiting till they're ready. I mean, we're talking about, it's always been a bit of a hypocrisy with the AFL that this is the toughest and supposedly most elite sporting competition in Australia, and people go in there as kids before they're fully physically developed. All this would do is basically leave them where they are for a little longer until they're physically ready, then bring them in, and they can have an impact straight away then, as opposed to, you know, spend time in the football nursery while at an AFL club, almost being a pretend AFL footballer. So I think that was an interesting thing.
It definitely was. There's a fair bit going on with Steve Hocking at the moment, very proactive, and look, I like what I see so far.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's a no-nonsense football administrator.
And let's not forget, played close to 200, if not 200 games of VFL, AFL. He knows the game.
Yep.
Saw it as a defender too, as a back pocket.
He would have played, we talked earlier about those West Coast flags in 99. I think he played in at least one of those grand finals.
Yeah, definitely. He certainly played in the great 89 grand final too.
Yes, he did.
Team.
Yes, yeah. He was probably, was he one of the Geelong players swinging like a windmill, was he, earlier on in the game?
Oh, yeah. was infamously on Dermot, I think, when he kicked those couple after he caught one in the ribs too. It's great, great grand final, great memories, you know, whichever side of the fence you're on.
Thanks for joining us today. We'll be back on Tuesday to have a look at JLT Community Series 2.
And the weekend of nothing, as far as on field, but certainly off the field. Our weekend West and Sunday Times looks at the 92, 94, 2006 and 2018 Premiership teams.
Yes.
Well, you're going to come up with a verdict.
Yes, that will
be. Who's the best of them?
Yes, well, I'll just hold my fire on that for now and keep everyone in suspense. All right, thanks for joining us. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch. Back on Tuesday. More to talk about then. Quarters, thanks for being here. And listeners, thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.